It's Living on Earth. I'm Steve Curwood. President Obama has declared the devastating March 22nd landslide in the Cascades a major disaster, making more programs and recovery aid available to Washington State. Some 50 people are dead or missing, most of them from a small community tucked into a bend in the Stillaguamish River. Ashley Ahern of the public radio collaborative EarthFix has been covering the disaster since it happened. She reports that the danger of landslides was known, but that didn't stop local officials from allowing homes to be built there.
Bonnie Brown sent me a picture of the cabin her parents built on the Stillaguamish River in the 70s.
And it was just a very beautiful place with beaver ponds and streams and meadows and trails through the woods, the kind of place that kids dream of.
She also sent me an aerial photo of her cabin after the tragic landslide.
And there's some grass around the cabin on three sides left, but other than that, it's...
Her voice trails off. The second picture shows giant gray fingers of rock and muck and debris encircling the little log cabin. The slide came down from the cliffs across the river, then up the other side, covering her neighborhood. Brown's family wasn't at the cabin when the slide occurred. She said over the years, her father and neighbors worried about flooding as the Stillaguamish meandered back and forth across its bed. Landslides weren't at the top of the list of concerns, but maybe they should have been. Dan McShane is a geologist in Whatcom County. He said when he heard there was a landslide on the Stillaguamish, he wasn't surprised.
The Stillaguamish setting, the geologic units are particularly sensitive relative to, say, a real solid granite bedrock somewhere else. And so the potential for the failure is much greater.
Towards the end of the last ice age, the Stillaguamish River was a giant lake blocked in by a glacier. It filled with soft lake sediments, sand, clay, gravel, the kind of stuff that falls apart when it's wet. And in recent years, scientists are getting a clearer and clearer picture of the scars on this landscape. Modern imaging technology called LIDAR shows 3D representations of the Stillaguamish riverbed today. It looks like a little kid took a toy dump truck with a backhoe and just moved along the river, taking giant clamshell bites out of the slopes. Those bites show where the landslides have occurred in the past. McShane says anyone can look at maps and get information like this if they have some time to surf the web.
You know, I mean, it's public, but whether it gets disseminated to the people that make land use decisions and planning for geologic hazards doesn't necessarily always happen.
The disconnect between the science and county officials and planners may have cost some of the residents of Steelhead Drive in Oso, Washington, their lives. A landslide occurred in the same place on the Stillaguamish in 2006, causing flooding. Snohomish County permitted 5 new homes to be built there that year, and another one in 2009. The Snohomish County Planning Office said they couldn't comment as to why those permits were issued, because they're busy with the recovery effort. McShane and others have said the size and reach of this landslide in particular was unprecedented. No two counties are the same when it comes to incorporating things like new geological mapping technology into their planning or permitting process. A lot of that variability stems from money, says Scott Burns. He's a geologist with Portland State University.
We can make landslide hazard maps, just like the earthquake hazard maps, just like the flood hazard maps. But very few of them have been done because we are in a cutback government mode.
The Washington Department of Natural Resources has detailed maps, though they're not as detailed as some of the latest 3D imaging. Some counties, like Cowlitz and Jefferson, are incorporating new landslide data into their websites. Burns says there's a ways to go, and the government needs to invest in hazard maps and use them in the permitting process. When Bonnie Brown's father built her cabin in the 70s, the mapping technology we have today didn't exist. But technology or not, she has no plans to rebuild.
The land and what we enjoyed around there is gone. I don't know, how long it'll take for nature to recover. But what was really our family's past is gone now.
That's EarthFix reporter Ashley Ahern, and she joins us on the line now from Seattle. Welcome, Ashley.
Hey, Steve.
So we're 2 weeks from the disaster now. Do officials have any more concrete information about what caused this horrible slide?
Well, initially they were looking at the actual geology of the area and seeing how the toe of the slide was sliding into the Stillaguamish River, and the river was sort of eating away at the base of it. So that was, allowing the slide to keep going and kind of destabilizing that earth. But there are other factors that were at play here as well. We've had a lot of rainfall this season. In March, particularly, it broke records in Seattle. And Darrington, the town, the nearest town that has a weather monitor system, had almost 19 inches of rain in March, which is, I think, the second highest amount of rain on record for that town. So there's the rainfall, and we know that heavy rains contribute to these deep-seated landslides. They destabilize the landscape. And then the other factor is logging. The State Department of Natural Resources permitted some logging to happen above the slide area. And the timber company, this is Grandy Lake Forest Associates, cut outside of their allotted area. So they were not allowed to be logging as close to the top of the slide as they did. And some people are saying that may have contributed to the loss of slope stability there as well.
How soon will we know if there's any idea of what will happen to that area of the of that river valley?
You know, I think that people are still getting their heads around the human tragedy and the scope of it. I mean, the amount of earth that is just covering this area makes it hard to picture where you would even put a house if you were going to try to rebuild. You know, the question of who builds on this plot, that's probably too soon to say. I would be surprised if that happens anytime soon, and furthermore, if it's permitted ever again.
Now, Ashley, you've been reporting on another rural community that lives within the constant danger of landslides, but hasn't yet had any major disaster or any loss of life. What did you learn about the people who choose to live there?
Yeah, I want to take you to another community just north in the Cascade Mountains as well. This is a community along the Skykomish River, and it's called the Mount Index River Sites. And this is a group of kind of a loose community of houses, cabins mostly, people who've lived out there for decades along this beautiful stretch of river near a place called Sunset Falls. And they have slides there a lot. The road washed out in 2009, and this winter they have been absolutely hammered. And the interesting thing about this community that I found is that they're on a private road, so they're not getting any state dollars to help with the road maintenance. So it's on the community. And the people that live in this community don't have a lot of money. And so spending more than $60,000 on this road is really, you know, they've come to the point where the landslides won, and they're not going to be probably rebuilding this road anytime soon. And so half of the community is cut off from access to Route 2, and the people are getting to their homes using ATVs. So I went out there to just ask, what is it about this place that draws you here? And I met a guy named Lauren Brayton, and his family has owned land right next to Sunset Falls on the Skykomish since 1972. And when I caught up with him, he was actually chopping up wood, and he's building a cabin right next to the slide area. And I asked him if he'd compare his community to Oso, and this is what he said.
You know, for all the people here, there was personal property loss and there was real estate loss. We had no deaths. So I compare this to Oso. I feel for them more than I do for us. We'll recover.
Well, I mean, and if there were people in these houses,
they would have been gone.
Does that make you scared as a homeowner? Are you ever?
No.
No.
When it's time to go, you'll go. Well, like yesterday, I was up working on here and it slid below me. The only concern I had was getting my tools in and getting them safe for the night, because I'll always work my way out.
Wow, Ashley, that's quite a response. How are other people reacting?
Yeah, Lauren wants to retire there, and he loves the natural beauty and the sanctuary. But, you know, down that same dirt road, you'll meet a variety of people and different perspectives. I met a guy named Ben Van Dusen, and he's lived out there for about 20 years. And the Oso landslide has him a bit more worried about the land and really what it's capable of doing. His house has flooded before, and the road has washed out completely into the river near his house in the past. But he says, for him, there aren't a lot of options.
Right now, today, I am stuck. Yeah, turn the hot water off. I don't have TV. I don't have Comcast. I don't have any of that. I get DVDs from the library. So I am stuck. If that's a dangerous slope, too bad. This is it.
He thinks the government should buy the homeowners out. All the people that live down this dirt road, he thinks this should be a place to visit, not a place to live. There's a lot of hiking in the area, a lot of outdoor recreation opportunities, rafting, that sort of thing. And he said, you know, if I had the choice, if I had an infusion of cash, I would probably move someplace safer.
Now, Ashley, you're going to stick around the slide area in these coming weeks and do some more reporting. What are you going to look into?
Right. I'm going to be heading up this week, talking to folks at the Environmental Protection Agency. They're going to be on the ground looking for things like hazardous materials. What kind of stuff comes out of a disaster like this and potentially ends up in the river? I'm also going to be looking into questions of planning and growth management and really what other communities in the state are vulnerable and may not know it. And then, you know, the other thing is, how did the Department of Natural Resources not follow up or reprimand this timber company when they were cutting outside of their allotted area? this is a tragedy that scientists and policymakers are going to be analyzing for years, and my hope is that we learn something from it and that we never forget these people and what they lost.
Ashley Ahern reports for the Public Media Collaborative, EarthFix. Thanks so much for taking the time, Ashley.
Thanks for having me, Steve.